All right, you want to talk about that, black box and damage mapping? We've already kind of covered it, but go ahead.
Yeah, we've kind of covered this, but I mean, obviously, going back to the comparison of a small trucking, or at least a small motor vehicle collision and a trucking collision, there's just a lot more. There's a lot more potential information that you need and that you're dealing with. So, the black box information is very important. I mean, for me, it obviously lets me know what my driver's been doing leading up to the accident and the days, the hours, that sort of thing. So if you have someone that's been speeding, and that's going to be there. So it's information that's very important for both sides. I mean, obviously, if you have a good driver, it's going to be good, and it's going to show that that driver's good. If you have a driver that's bad and speeds and does bad things, that's going to be there as well. So very important.
And your black box downloads are going to give you just a wealth of information. We have one recently where it's really weird. You can tell this vehicle's going along at 53 miles per hour in heavy traffic on 635 in Dallas, and it goes down to about 41, then it goes down to 35, and then it finally goes down to 20 and it stops. But we know that he didn't brake prior to hitting a small vehicle. And once I gave it to my accident recon, he goes, no, your crash was when he went from 53 to 41. And I said, why? And number one, there was no braking. And number two, he said, we looked at the crash, and it was an override crash. In other words, think again about monster trucks. It hit him high. It kind of overrid him, and he just kept going. And, you know, that's why you need to go ahead and have an accident recon guy that could tell you what that stuff means. But even more importantly, it told you that, in essence, it was a rear-end collision on a stopped vehicle without ever touching your brakes. And, of course, that gives a rise to all sorts of arguments on a plaintiff's side. As I say, that tells me you're a distracted driver. I'm just not sure what you're distracted by yet. So that's one thing. Final thing I do want to talk about, and it's not really something that involves William, but it involves a lot of plaintiff's cases. I made a good deal of money over the years on cases where there is limits already being paid, and a lot of people just stop with that, but they don't look at what the potential failure that was the injury-causing mechanism was. Is it a roof failure that caused someone to be a quadriplegic? Is it a seatbelt failure that caused someone to have a terribly lacerated inner organ such that they wear a colostomy bag the rest of their lives? Things like that. And what you'll find is, in a lot of these bad crashes, there can be a crash-worthiness component. You've got to get that. That means you've got to save the car, and that's what happens most of the time, why this stuff doesn't happen. People aren't smart enough to save the car, and a lot of times people just don't think about it. Charlie Ginn was up here a minute ago, the Ted Lasso guy. I happen to know his firm. One of their biggest cases right now is a case where there was a cement mixer, where the cement mixer, the barrel of the cement mixer in a bad crash came off and caused horrible injuries, with the barrel free flowing over the vehicles besides just the initial impact. Well, I believe I understand from that firm, because they're good friends of mine, I believe the initial coverage is only $1 million for the cement mixer themselves company. But they've got a very viable products case against the manufacturer of the barrel for not having proper fasteners. So think outside the box. Think about the possibility that there may be some secondary crashworthiness. And there's very few people that can bring those home, but a lot of them, Judy, me, and others know who they are, and they can help. So, all right. I want to next go into a little bit about the theories of liability against the trucker. And what we're not going to do today is we're not going to House Bill 19 this, because I will tell you, first off, I've been to 5 or 6 dedicated CLEs on House Bill 19. And if you really ask me if I fully and completely understand all the implications of it, the answer is no. And
same.
Okay. Yeah. Because you know what Williams has said a half dozen times, because we get together every now and then for dinner or whatever. Hey, I want you to come educate me on House Bill 19. And I always manage not to get around to doing that because I don't know. But I do know that with House Bill 19, you do need to focus on the trucker's negligence, because you may be faced with having to deal with the trucker's negligence before you can later on potentially bring in the trucking company's negligence. And so what I want to do with the trucker and what he's going to try to keep me from, and before I go into my spiel, how do you inoculate your trucker for what you know you're about to hear from me when I'm taking his deposition?
I just tell him to say a few prayers. No, seriously. Usually you're going to have this preventability. I mean, if you do any amount of trucking, you know the issue there. If there's an accident, there's going to be a document in the file. It's going to say that there was a finding that the accident was preventable. If you have a good lawyer on the other side, they're going to argue that preventability means negligence. And you have to... You understand the rationale behind it when it comes to safety and teaching drivers right from wrong, but you also hate it that it's in the file because you have to acknowledge it. So you have to when you're going through depo prep with your driver, you have to educate them on, yeah, it was a preventable accident, but that doesn't mean that I was negligent. You also have to educate them on